Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Today is Thursday, April 3rd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, and subscribe to Chicken Whisperer magazine. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
You've just entered a dimension of dirty water, a dimension of poop-filled water, a dimension of stagnant water. You've crossed into the Dirty Waterer Zone. But up ahead is your signpost to cleaner water, the Brightap Chicken Waterer. The Brightap Waterer is fully covered. Chickens drink from special valves, so dirt and droppings can't get into the water. Chickens get sparkling clean water. You get less work. No poop-filled water pans for you to touch or wash out. Brightap, clean water made simple. Visit chickenwaterer.com to learn more. That's chickenwaterer.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer. I had to look out the window here for a second to see exactly where I'm at. I guess that is a occupational hazard right now with being on the 2014 Spring Tower to the Poultry Tour with Tractor Supply, traveling from state to state to state. And it's been quite an adventure, to say the least. We're having a great time. I'm very blessed to do what I do, spread the chicken love. Turned a hobby into a successful business, and I get to travel with my family. I have a one-year-old, a two-year-old, and, of course, my wife, and we all travel in our RV around the country, again, spreading the chicken love. We love to meet people. We love to see the sights. We do kind of program in some extra days to have family time. But let me just kind of start at the beginning. Oh, our guest today, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD in poultry scientist. She's going to be here with a great topic today. So go ahead and try to find a pen and pencil. Get a spiral notebook. You're going to want to take some notes today because we have a great guest and a great topic. So we'll get to that here shortly. But we really kicked the event back in, we really kicked this event off back in early March. We did a national live broadcast at CDC headquarters in Atlanta. We were stationed in Atlanta for about 10 days, and then we hit the road for the tour with Tractor Supply. I think we've done about 7 events so far, Mobile, Alabama, Hammond, Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana, Beaumont, Texas, College Station, Texas, Waco, Texas, Mesquite, Texas, and Oklahoma City. And I have an event tonight from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. here at the Tractor Supply in Wichita, Kansas. It is, there's two apparently in Wichita on the same road on the opposite sides of town. So this is the West, for people who are local, the West Tractor Supply on the, apparently the west side, I think. Anyway, that the street is west. So, but anywho, at least that's what, it's all on my Facebook page. It all comes a blur. But if you go to facebook.com/thechickenwhisper, again, that's facebook.com/thechickenwhisper, you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the tour schedule, and you'll see the exact address of the Tractor Supply I will be at tonight. And each event, if you didn't know, is basically a two-hour Getting Started with Backyard Poultry Workshop. We want to make sure these folks that are getting started, that are buying these baby chicks at Tractor Supply, get some knowledge, get some training on how to do it the right way the first time without having to reinvent the wheel and waste their money and not be such a fun time. And then following that is a book signing, pictures, autographs, things like that, Q&A. So we're having a really good time. So that'll be tonight in Wichita. And then tomorrow is a travel day, and it's going to be real interesting. We're in Tornado Alley. And I think I posted on Facebook yesterday that, note to self, just for the record, I don't think I'll ever schedule a tour through Tornado Alley in the spring ever again. It's been quite the experience, even starting back in Mobile, where they have a lot of Gulf moisture coming off the Gulf, and the cool front comes through, they get some bad storms. So I guess probably 3 times, maybe 4 times now, we've had to alter our plans. We have not missed an event yet, knock on wood, and we either used a fun day to travel business, I guess comes first. We're on tour, we're trying to supply, but it hasn't stopped us from enjoying the family. But there's been about 3 or 4 times we've had to leave early or leave right behind the storm, maybe a little late, and tail the storm wherever it was headed because of these severe storms in springtime, Tornado Alley last night. Fortunately, we're staying in a RV resort that has a very nice size, large underground concrete tornado shelter. And we were in that about 15 minutes last night because we weren't sure which way the storm was going to go. We went to our south, thank goodness. My SUV, is glad for that, and my car insurance is glad for that, because last night the local weatherman, this may just be coincidence because the Chicken Whisperer is in Wichita, but we heard that there was hen egg-sized hail, and then it went to teacup-sized hail with that particular storm. So I was very glad that it missed us. We just got a little shower and a little lightning and thunder. That was about it. But the scary part is, even if there's not a storm, it is windy as just about I've ever experienced it. So, and we're running into that now with this travel. I'm not sure if we're going to leave tonight immediately after, which I hope we don't have to. I don't think so. But all day tomorrow, winds are supposed to be 25, 26 miles per hour. And wind and pulling an RV do not, they don't play together, wind and RVs. They just do not play together. They don't do really well. So it's we're just trying to watch the hourly very carefully to see when. I'm glad we have an extra day factored in Friday, but if it's windy all day, it doesn't help us much. For our Saturday morning event in Kansas City, actually, it's Independence, Missouri, which is just on the Missouri side as the Kansas City is split basically straight up the middle. It's on the Missouri side, but for the most part, it's a Kansas City event, Independence, Missouri. And that'll be Saturday morning, and then we'll head out to Columbia, Missouri, off I-70 for a Sunday event. So it's just going to be real tricky here lately. The Saturday event may be the closest one that may get canceled due to poor travel and unsafe travel. So we'll just have to see. I hate canceling events, but this one may be the closest that we may have to do that based on the wind and travel. So we'll see. We'll try to get there best we can. Gotta love it. We've had a great time as far as the family. We've been to some wonderful children's museums. We've been to awesome playgrounds that I just thought were over the top, amazing. We've been to the Houston Zoo, the Oklahoma City Zoo, the Houston Aquarium, Houston Children's Museum. Spent a lot of time, obviously, in Houston. And an Oklahoma zoo was awesome. I really liked the design of that one because it was designed where kids were in a stroller they could see. But at the Houston Zoo, I had to, every time we got to an exhibit for the most part, I had to unbuckle them, lift them up so they could see, then put them back, strap them in, and then tour the next one. The Oklahoma City Zoo was designed where you just, you know, pulled, it was kind of up high. You could just, you know, scroll with the stroller right up to the exhibit, and you could think the kids could see everything. So I like that aspect of it, obviously. But having a great time on tour. It has been an experience. The week right before we left, when we were in Atlanta, we all had that head chest cold thing that went through all four of us. And then probably about 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, the stomach bug went through all four of us. I contribute that to getting that, I think, at the Lake Charles Children's Museum. Come to find out, two stops later, a gentleman was from there, and he said it was really going rampant, that stomach bug in Lake Charles. And so, great. It would have been nice to know that when we got to the Children's Museum. But and nonetheless, that went through all four of us. And then, but so far, so good as far as our help, which has become a blessing, so looking forward to that. Just scheduled a big event. We'll probably get back. The last event on this tour is April 13th, Sunday, April 13th, near Chattanooga, Tennessee. And then we'll get back to Atlanta, spend a week there with family for Easter, and then we'll get back to the old homestead. But we're only going to be there for about 2 weeks because we have another event in Nashville, Tennessee. I never turned down Nashville. I just love the city of Nashville. But we'll be heading back up there for a big event on Saturday, May 10th. With Tractor Supply, there's a big local chicken event there. That the event itself was looking at me coming up there. They were trying to get some big sponsors to get me up there, and then Tractor Supply stepped up. So we're going to have a big Tractor Supply tent there. I will be there. I'm arranging now to have a big chicken coop giveaway for that event itself, and we'll be doing Q&A most of the day and just meeting and autograph books, things like that. So that will be on the tent. I'll put that on Facebook as it comes a little closer. We are giving away an awesome chicken coop right now, both in Chicken Whisperer magazine. You can subscribe to Chicken Whisperer magazine for free, the digital edition for free, and right online. Just go to my Facebook page, posted last night how to subscribe for free. You can and then enter this contest, again, obviously for free. If you want the print subscription, if you like a magazine coming to your house, touchy-feely, sit in my easy chair and read a magazine, $9.95 for the whole year. Awesome. And you can enter that coop contest. It's a beautiful coop from Green Chicken Coop Company. The shipping, the coop, everything valued, I think, at $2,800. Just fill out a form, mail it in, and you're entered. We also just started the April Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest, and that is an awesome contest that's going on right now. And with extremecoops.com, and it is an all-new fiberglass chicken coop. A lot of their styles are styles you recognize, kind of the Amish chicken-built wooden wood coops, that farm-style coop. But they're totally made out of fiberglass, which makes them lighter. I think this one is a pretty nice-sized coop, 6-foot by 5-foot coop, rated, I think, for about 15 chickens. So it's a large coop, 350 pounds versus much heavier for a wood one. Also, hey, easier to clean. Spray it out, disinfect it. It's fiberglass, so much easier to clean than the wood. Maybe a little less places for mites and lice to hang out versus all the joints with wood. So, but nonetheless, check them out and extremepoops.com. And they're doing the April Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest. We've got that contest going on right now as well. So, and we've signed on a few sponsors recently. We've got Woodtex Products, which is a coop manufacturer. They've got a manufacturer about 3 or 4 places. I know they're in New York, North Carolina, and Texas, to name a few. And then, so they've signed on a sponsor. And then, of course, Cackle Hatchery has signed on to be a sponsor as well. So visit those great folks out. And it looks like we're going to be signing on Snaplock Chicken Coops again for the Chicken Whisperer Approved Program. And that's the coop that we may be giving away at that event in May up in Nashville, Tennessee. So got to love it. Looks like Gray has joined us in the chat room. Welcome, Dr. McRae. So glad you could join us today. It's been a little bit, it's been a while because we've been on the road. And, of course, a lot of times we are in the road. I have my foot on the gas pedal riding down the road during showtime. So we try to do as many shows as we can when we're on the road. Today happens to be one of those days. We're very fortunate to have a poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae. She is a contributor for Chicken Whisperer magazine and co-author of the Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. So we have a very interesting topic. Like I said, get that pen and paper out. You're going to want to be taking some notes or at least be listening very, very carefully today for our topic that a lot of people have interest about, and it's basically understanding poultry vaccinations and the immune response. That's going to be, again, today's topic. And of course, if you miss any of today's show, it will be archived for your listening pleasure 100%. Today is episode 916. Doing this for 6 years now, or this is our sixth year of broadcasting, into our sixth year of broadcasting. This is episode 916, and all 916 are archived for your listening pleasure. So if you want to hear an episode that Dr. McRae did 4 years ago, you can find it. It'll be there waiting on you. So I got to love that. So let me get over here to the switchboard, and we will bring on, first let's give her a big, warm Chicken Whisperer welcome. If I can push the right button, there she is. She is now joining us live. Hey, Doc, thanks for joining us.
Can you hear me okay, Andy?
Loud and clear.
Wonderful. Well, you have been everywhere, except for Delaware.
Been crazy. Yeah, well, we're heading that way. It's not in stone yet, so I'm not going to say this is where we're going, but right now it looks like this is where we're going. In the fall, I say fall, probably somewhere between August 15th and September 15th to the Northeast. So we're looking at somewhere between like Virginia and Maine, or including everything in between Virginia and Maine, probably the
wow.
same thing we're doing.
Wow, we're going to have to hang out.
We may just have to have an event and do a radio show live. We'll factor in some extra time and all the cool things to see it that way. But I got to pick my...
Well, I don't
I really
start teaching till the end of August, so if you're in my neighborhood, let's get together.
That sounds good. Or maybe I can just sneak into one of your classes and learn a little bit about it.
I won't make you take a pop quiz, I promise.
No pop quizzes on the day that I'm there. We can have soda and gum in the class and maybe some chips the day I'm there. And then I'm kind of rebelling all my high school teachers. No pop, no soda, no gum in my class, no chewing gum, Mr. Snyder. And so, yeah, and then I'll bring cupcakes in for everybody. So, so today's topic, very interesting. I'm sure it'll get a lot of listens on the archive because a lot of people are interested in exactly what we're talking about, the vaccine and how it affects the immune system of our birds. So we're ready to absorb all the information.
We often talk about giving our birds antibiotics. Sorry, I twisted my leg and I just impinged my
very physical, folks.
Muscle.
Radio is very physical. Don't let anybody fool you or tell you the wrong. I'm telling you what, it's broadcasting live on the radio is very physical. Football players, you've got it made.
No, I have trouble when I twist in my little chair and I can't bend my knee that way. So we talk about antibiotics quite often, and, you know, that's something that's easily accessible. You can get it at the feed store, and people throw antibiotics at their birds, but vaccinations are different, and the bird's response is different. So I kind of wanted to go over that so that your listeners would understand and not be afraid of vaccinations. If you have a better understanding of what a vaccination can and cannot do, then you can make a better decision. So, you know, there are vaccines that you give, and not all vaccines mean that you have to give a shot. Vaccinations can come either as a shot or maybe an eye drop or nose drop. Sometimes you can give it with a misting device if you have a large number of birds. Other times it's just a wing web stab. And that doesn't require you to do anything but poke two holes in the wing web, and it's super easy. But what you're doing with the vaccination, that's kind of what I want to – what you're doing to the immune response, that's kind of what I want to go over with your listeners, Andy.
Okay.
So basically, I'm going to respond occasionally in human terms, so I may call upon your knowledge, Andy, to kind of turn it into human terms, make it more relatable to your listeners.
Okay,
so
I'll try to pay attention.
First of all, I'm sorry?
I'll try to pay attention.
Okay. Vaccinations are something that you do have to do some planning so that you set aside the time to get it done. Certain vaccines are only good for a certain number of hours after they've been mixed up. So you have to handle them properly, because if you're going to set aside the time to do this, you don't want to do something like set your live vaccine down on the hood of a hot car when it needs to be kept on ice. So take the time to learn about whatever vaccination you're going to do and make sure you initiate those steps based upon the label directions. So we've got a couple things that we're going to refer to, the antigen and the antibody. Any living organism seeks to eliminate foreign bodies. And when you get a virus or a bacteria inside our body or a chicken's body, the host, meaning the human or the chicken, is going to try to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not always can you change them chemically and eliminate them through feces or urine. Sometimes we have to initiate a different response in our bodies. So the mechanism for removal.
When I had the stomach bug, I had two responses to try to get rid of that bug. Definitely.
Sometimes you just try to urinate it out or defecate it out, and that's not always an option. Sometimes these organisms get into your blood. So the mechanism that our bodies or a chicken's body uses in the development of a chemical substance, for the removal of the chemical substance in the form of a bacteria or virus, is creating antibodies. Antibodies are what our body creates to eliminate a virus or a bacteria, otherwise known as the antigen. So the antigen can be something that you pick up, your chicken picks up because it pecks a wild bird's feces, or maybe they come in contact with a new bird that was shedding antigens. We say that sometimes a bird is a silent carrier. Well, that means that bird is shedding or spreading virus or bacteria without showing any symptoms. So they are shedding antigen. Sometimes we want to give our birds antigens. To make that relatable in human terms, remember back when we were kids, Andy, when somebody's kid in the school came down with chicken pox, a lot of parents would take their children over to that house and hopefully mm-hmm. their children would get the antigen for chicken pox.
Yeah, Cox parties.
And that's like inoculating your child with the most mild form of the chicken pox at a young age, preferably, because the older you get when you get chicken pox, the worse it can be. You want your kids to get it when they're young.
I had chicken pox when I was 22 years of age.
Oh, honey, I'm so sorry.
And even then, I'm still worried because it was what I would consider a mild case. So I'm still concerned if when Caleb and Lily get it, that I'll be like, okay, Jen, you the next 10 days are all yours.
I was five when I got it. And, you know, the worst thing you have to worry about with kids when they get it young is telling them and insisting that they not scratch.
When they're young, when you're 22, it's hard enough.
I know. But you can get it a little bit worse. You can get a little bit higher fever sometimes, and it can be a little more dangerous the older you get. But going back, you can give your chicken a vaccination that contains live or killed virus or bacteria. Sometimes you can give them a shot that contains, like, say, one live bacteria or live virus. That's called a monovalent vaccine. That means there's one or a single antigen in there.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can give them a vaccination that contains multiple antigens, multiple virus or bacteria or combination thereof.
For humans, that would be like the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella.
You got it. And that's called a polyvalent vaccine or vaccination. And what you're trying to do by giving them live or killed vaccines is by giving the shot to the chicken or the human, you're trying to induce resistance by giving the host the antigen. You want to train the host to produce antibodies. And you're giving them usually a mild form of sickness, something you can control. And the antibody response is something that the body remembers. So next time you come across a child with chicken pox, or you come across a chicken with mycoplasma, the chicken's body knows what to do. It says, oh, I've had this before, and I have filed away in my memory system the antibodies that I need to produce to take care of this problem. Here, let me go get that file, make some more of it, and basically that file is an antibody history, and they take their antibodies for the antigen and surround the antigen with the correct antibodies to neutralize it. That's how vaccines work. You're training the host's body to recognize and respond properly with the correct antibodies so that, you know, if you get in contact with that organism, your body knows what to do. So if your host, whether it be a chicken or a human, comes across an antibody that it doesn't know how to handle, and it goes, I don't know what this is, I don't know what response to give, the host can be overwhelmed by the disease. So you could get sick. So if I get a cold and I don't have the antibodies to that cold, I'm going to come down with a cold. Or it could be the flu. If I don't have the antibodies for the version of the cold or flu that I have been exposed to, I'm going to come down with it. Now, where does death come in? Death comes in when the symptoms overwhelm the body. Either you die actual organism causing the sickness, or the secondary organisms, or sometimes the symptoms themselves are what do you in. So if I come down with the flu, hopefully I've had my flu shot, and I have had my flu shot this year, but my body, if I didn't have the flu shot, could be overwhelmed so much by the amount of virus that's replicating in my body, that my other functions can no longer perform properly, and I pass away. The other option is a secondary infection comes in. Like, I have the flu, but then I come down with something else, an E. coli infection. Like, say, like for chickens, that might be colibacillosis. And we know E. coli is everywhere in our environment, right, Andy? It's everywhere. And sometimes that's what nosocomial infections are in the hospital. You've heard of those, right, Andy?
Yep.
So it could be the virus opens the door for taking down your immune system, or at least reducing its efficiency. And if your immune system isn't operating efficiently, then the opportunistic secondary infection agents can come in and say, woohoo, we're hanging out here because we are totally able to reproduce ourselves and send more of ourselves out into the environment. Let's hang out here. And that is what could kill the host. Other things that could kill the host are the symptoms, like, say, a high fever. Your body is responding to the agent of infection by trying to kill it with heat. And it's a balancing act. When the body is trying to kill the invader or the antigen by producing a fever, the risk is that you kill the host as well. Or maybe you have excess mucus production, and somebody is just not able to cough it up, and then you get a lung infection after all that. So there are reasons why we have created vaccinations over the years, and it is so that we can hopefully produce antibodies in our host, in the humans or the birds, and not end up with somebody who passes away, but rather some bird or some person who recovers from the disease. Usually, with a virus, in general, recovery doesn't take place until the antibody appears. And it takes time for the host to, number one, recognize that there's a problem, and then start initiating the functions to create the antibody. If the host survives long enough in the presence of the disease, usually a week, then the body will stimulate production of the antibody, and antibody is important. So that's why we say if you see a sick bird, put it aside. It's going to take time for that bird's body to start producing antibodies. And if they have the antibodies to that organism, they're going to have to put it into production and then hopefully take care of all the antigen, and then they got to recover. And that all takes time. So during sickness, the antibody is not produced against the viral or bacterial cells, but against the proteins on the cell's surface. And proteins on the cell surface are basically a combination of carbohydrates and proteins. We call those glycoproteins. And each invading antigen, cell, virus, contains kind of like a lock. It's a very specific lock to which the antibody fits, and that's why we want those antibodies to surround the invading organism, the invading antigen, and neutralize it. So it's very specific, the response that we're looking for. And, you know, there are different types of immune responses or antibodies that we can produce. IgS, IgM, IgG, IgA, you know, all of these are different types of antibodies that the body can produce. And if you wanted to study that, it's a pretty good field to go into for your young listeners is immunology.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, basically we want to stimulate immune response to overcome the disease. And when we talk about immunity, it's the result of the formation of the antibody, and you're also activating lymphoid cells or macrophages or white blood cells. So you want to avoid the nasty wild-type strain that could come along and devastate your flock
mm-hmm.
by inoculating your birds with a controlled strain. And it's the wild-type strain that can be nasty.
Here's the million-dollar question. If I had to just guess, I think it's a pretty educated guess, I would guess the majority of people that are listening to this now live, the majority of people who are listening to the archive, and maybe I shouldn't say majority, because I still believe that the people who are wanting 100% organic, organic flock, organic eggs, organic meat, organic chickens, organic lifestyle, still probably are not in the majority of the U.S. population. So maybe that's a bad term, but I would bet a lot of people listening to this episode today, somebody I just posted on Facebook as well, Dr. McRae, that the million-dollar question for them is, when I order these baby chicks, if I'm going to hatch out these chicks, I'm going to purchase them from a breeder, and I choose to, say, get the Marek's vaccine, maybe the coccidiosis vaccine, and we'll just say the fowlpox vaccine. If I choose to get those for my day-old baby chicks or whatever, will I technically still at that point, I get them vaccinated, and then I, you know, whatever, start on my organic feed and da-da-da-da-da, is that going to affect, or will that eliminate the fact that I am raising my birds organically? And I guess my follow-up question to that, or is related, is if you know, because you spend a lot of time in kind of in the commercial back in college, PhD and whatnot, are these eggs that we buy certified organic in the grocery store? I would guess that even those birds that they're being fed organic feed, but they are still inoculated with a lot of stuff, but they're still certified organic. So a double question there. So if I choose
okay,
as a
backyarder...
Okay, so
let me answer the organic question first.
Is that okay?
So since the majority of your listeners probably aren't raising birds organically, or that's not the crux of your audience set, you... are those who raise birds organically for egg production have birds on this earth for a far longer period of time than those who raise birds for organic meat production. So their set of shots that they would give would be different from someone who was raising birds for organic meat production, if they get shots at all. For organic production, each company has a certifier, someone who they hire to certify that they are doing things according to national organic standards. And depending on which certifier they have, certain vaccinations may or may not be allowed.
Okay,
so you would have to check with each individual company to see which vaccinations they do based upon what their certifier will permit. So, Marek's disease.
I know this to be true. Some of the certifying agencies that do either certify humane or others organically, that even though they can still put organic on this egg carton, they can still treat quote unquote sick birds with antibiotics and still have those eggs come out and be packaged as organic because they're not treating the mass flock. They're treating a group of sick birds or a sick bird here or there. But I just, like I said, that's I think, a big question.
And usually after you do a treatment like that, they're no longer qualified as organic. So usually have a label that runs right alongside your organic label where those birds end up.
Okay.
So the eggs from the birds that have been treated are no longer organic, and you sell those eggs under a different label that isn't organic. And people who certify, like certified humane, certified organic, they're going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
When I say organic certifiers, there's a good dozen or more companies out that you could hire to certify your product as organic. So you have to actually shop around for organic certifiers to see if one fits, you know, your needs and that you can work well with. But going back to the majority of your listeners who are backyard flock owners and Merrick's disease, let's start with Merrick's disease. Merrick's disease is everywhere. It is a disease that causes tumors in the bird that can affect either organs or can affect the nervous system. It's really kind of a cool virus. But it's everywhere in all countries, on all of our 50 states. It's there. You just assume it's there. And for the majority of your listeners, if they're not trying to initiate a really serious breeding program for their genetic lines where they are breeding out Merrick's disease or susceptibility to Merrick's disease, just go get your chicks vaccinated at the hatchery when you order them. Why? Chicks are most receptive to the Merrick's disease vaccine within 24 hours of hatching. After that, their receptivity to that vaccine drops by 50% every day thereafter.
Wow.
Okay. So if you're ordering chicks, order them already vaccinated for Merrick's disease. If you're hatching them out yourself, have a bottle of the vaccine on hand for hatching day. And it's just a little shot that you give under the skin at the back of the neck. You use a really short, thin needle so you don't stab yourself or, you know, put it in too deep for the chick.
Mm-hmm.
Then you talked about coccidiosis. That's a slightly different vaccine. Coccidiosis is a protozoa. It's not a virus. It's not a bacteria. But we have figured out a way to vaccinate the birds for it. Mm-hmm. And again, if you choose to have your birds vaccinated for coccidia at the hatchery, you would not feed medicated feed.
Correct.
Because the medicated feed is basically a coccidia stat. Means it kills the coccidia. Well, the vaccine is a live virus. You're giving the birds a mild form or a mild dose of coccidia. So if you give them the coccidia stat and they've been vaccinated, you just negated or clicked undo on your vaccination. That's why if you give your birds a vaccine for coccidia, you do not feed medicated feed. Whether to do it or not, it's up to you. I would rather have one less thing to worry about. So sometimes I will have that done. Other vaccines that you can give would be given on a vaccine schedule. Just like with children, and you have two young ones coming up through the ranks for chicken whisperhood, you can give them vaccines as they reach certain ages in their growth. You don't want to give them a big dose of the rough and tumble vaccine while their immune systems are young. You kind of wean them into these vaccines slowly and surely, giving them gradually stronger and stronger vaccines so that they develop the appropriate immune response. And you can do the same thing with chickens. And that's sometimes what the commercial laying hen industry does, and also the broiler breeder industry. Birds that are around longer than, say, a six-week-old broiler or an eight-week-old roaster, those birds are going to be exposed to more antigens or agents of disease. So when they're young, you gradually give them doses of vaccines and build up their immune systems. And then once a year, you give them a shot. Just kind of as a booster, a reminder. It's a reminder shot. That's a good way to describe it. Okay, so vaccines that you give are actually prepared from the organisms that cause the disease, or sometimes they disassemble the organisms and just use parts of the organisms to put into the vaccine. Sometimes you will give a fully virulent organism a heat treatment or a chemical treatment to weaken it, or what we call that is sometimes attenuation, or sometimes it's called modified. Other times, you can just give the killed organism, and that provides a different response. Most viral vaccines consist of living attenuated agents, but bacterial vaccines are usually, but not always, inactivated. So that's something to consider. One of the exceptions are foul cholera and mycoplasma. So there are other things that you can do, and using recombinant DNA proteins for putting into vaccines that are given, polyvalent vaccines. So you can do, you might be able to do a vaccine that contains mycoplasma, infectious bronchitis, and Newcastle disease. Now, the more things that you stuff into a vaccine, a shot, the price goes up, because that's the companies have to figure out, number one, are these organisms going to play nice inside the bottle? You don't want to put in a version of mycoplasma that's not going to play nice with the Newcastle disease and perhaps inactivate it. Or, something that's too strong for the bird, for the mycoplasma, thereby causing the Newcastle to kind of overwhelm the system. So that's why the price goes up the more things that you put into a vaccine bottle. So DNA, recombinant DNA technology is a big part of what we're using sometimes in the vaccine bottles. This is an area of science that is wide open for industrious young people interested in the health and welfare of poultry to do some research and work. Molecular biology is well worth the effort for some of your homeschool families and some of your young people. You want to pay attention to the amount of time you give for creating a reaction in the birds. You don't want to give them shots, bing, bang, boom, one right after the other. Sometimes you have to allow a few days, between giving the vaccine and getting the immune response. So usually it's around a week to 10 days. And therefore, giving it a few more days, you might be able to come back and give another shot. But you have to allow the body the time it takes to create the response. Sometimes you can buy vaccines in a bottle. It looks like there's a little disc down in the bottom. It's a dried out version of all the vaccine agents. It's lyophilized. That's what we call it. Or think of it as freeze dried. You can buy freeze dried chicken to get your pets. It's freeze dried virus, and it's a way for the virus to travel from where it's produced to wherever you're going to give the shot without without being subjected to too much damage due to environmental conditions. That doesn't mean that you should leave your virus in the car when it's, you know, 100 degrees outside and it's 200 degrees in your car and expect everything's going to be okay. So, you know, if you've got, like, say, a live virus, you want to treat it carefully. And sometimes with those lyophilized viruses, you have to add something called an adjuvant. A lot of inactivated vaccines contain adjuvants. Adjuvants are basically serve to slowly release the antigen, and it continually stimulates the immune response. And the adjuvant might contain oil immersion, emulsion, or lipozymes, lipid microorganisms, or a chemical called aluminum hydroxide. And sometimes that can create a small local tissue reaction, and that increases the immune response. So with some of these organisms, you, like, say you're raising heritage chickens, Andy. Maybe you're raising heritage barred Plymouth Rocks, and you're going to sell the males for meat, but you're going to keep the hens for egg production. Well, everyone's going to get a shot, because at some point you're still not going to know which are males and which are females. You wouldn't want to give it the shot in the breast muscle, perhaps, because with the males, you might create a small cyst because of the adjuvant. You would want to give the shot somewhere else on the body that still has, you know, if it were an intramuscular shot, it has enough muscle to do the job, but you wouldn't want it to be in the most high-value cut of meat. This is something you also teach 4-H'ers and FFAers and young people when they're giving shots to their cattle or their sheep. You don't want to lose a high-value cut of meat just because you gave the shot there. So those are things to consider. The adjuvant may cause a little tissue reaction, but that is designed to increase the immune response so you get a slow release of antigen. And it when that antigen is slowly released, the immune system's like, oh, yeah, this is how I handle that. I create this antibody. Immunity can be active or immunity – oh, I'm sorry. I'll finish up with this little section, Andy, and then we can go to commercial.
Okay. Sounds great.
Immunity can be active or it can be passive. Active immunity is when the host or the subject actively produces the antibody in consequence of recovering from a disease following vaccination. The antibody is in the bloodstream – and is replaced as, you know, they are removed from the bloodstream. In passive immunity, the antibody is produced into the host by either injection, maternal transfer, like maternal antibodies, or even egg yolk transfer. So passive immunity does impart an immediate but temporary state of immunity against an infection and protects the very young against disease organisms during the first few weeks of life, like egg yolk transfer of immunoglobulin antibodies from the hen to the chick, aids in the chick's ability to fight off infectious disease organisms. So you would hope that mom and dad were vaccinated so that the young one has the immune system ready to go, primed and ready to go to fight off whatever it could meet in the environment. So that's something to consider if your listeners are selling chicks. Maybe they're working on preserving a breed and they want to encourage more people to raise that breed in order to preserve it. You might want to consider a vaccination program that produces maternal antibodies that protect the young through passive immunity. So the hen is vaccinated. They pass along those antibodies to the chick through the egg yolk, and after hatching, the egg yolk is absorbed. Its antibody is absorbed as well, and that's transferred to the blood of the chick. So that's parental immunity or maternal immunity, and that's almost constant for, you know, 3 or 4 days after the yolk, or pretty much until the yolk is all the way absorbed, so after hatch. After that, parental or maternal immunity declines, those antibodies are lost, and so the half-life of those immunoglobulins is about 4 days. And we talk about half-lives, so half of the antibodies are gone after about 4 days.
That's good. I had eggs for breakfast, so I guess I'm immune now to Merrick's.
Well, those birds probably weren't given an update shot for since they were placed in the layer house, so you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about that. But, you know, you can see that the reason why the parents are given maybe protection against, like, infectious bursal disease, you know, but if you give the parents shots for a particular disease, that doesn't necessarily protect the chick against all organisms. It's very specific. If you give the parents a shot for IBDV, the chick's going to be protected for IBDV, but maybe not fowlpox, okay? So you've got to be rather specific on what they're protected for. And with that, Andy, I think this might be
okay.
The time for you to go to commercial.
That sounds great. Thank you very much for awesome information so far. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking with poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, and we're talking a little bit kind of how the immune response to vaccinations with our chicks and chickens. So there'll be more to come. So if you are just joining us, no worries. The show is archived for your listening pleasure. You'll be able to listen to it in its entirety after the show, probably 15 minutes after we end the show. If you are listening to the archive now, weeks from today, thank you very much for tuning in. But we'll be back right after this short break from our sponsors.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers.
This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today, poultry scientist and professor, Dr. Bridget McCray, PhD, and we're talking all about the vaccines and the response on these chicks and chickens. So as we lead into this next segment, I know she hasn't outlined it, and I may be jumping the gun here, but we often hear that it is a very valid possibility that no matter how much we vaccinate our chickens, they still might get that disease.
That's with any vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of factors that come into play. Were you sick when you got your vaccination? Was there something that was already suppressing your immune system so that you got a poor vaccine response? Like if someone has diabetes or if you have an autoimmune disease or if you are currently sick when you got your vaccination, that can affect your ability to give a proper vaccine response. And that's where biosecurity comes into play for your flock. You want to have birds healthy at the time that they get their vaccination so that you don't waste your time. So most vaccines that are properly applied will create a state of immunity that lasts 3 to 6 weeks, which goes longer. And, you can follow up with a booster that reinitiates that state of immunity. But, there's an immunological competence, parental immunity, immunosuppression. Those are all things that can affect how the host responds to vaccines. So chicks and baby turkeys don't usually become fully competent immunologically until they're 6 weeks of age, but they do have partial competence during the 12th day of embryonation or embryo development. That allows us as humans to come up with vaccination programs where they can be vaccinated in the shell or in ovo. So they get their first shot sometimes before they even hatch out, which allows us to deliver the vaccine more efficiently, so we know that every single bird got the vaccine because every single egg was vaccinated. And so they hatch out ready to go, so we don't have to depend on humans to give them a shot after they hatch out. And a lot of the broiler industry and the laying hen industry uses in ovo or embryo vaccination machines. They're really quite interesting to take a look at. These machines not only candle the eggs, but they give them the shot, as well as giving them sometimes a little booster of maybe probiotics or vitamins, depending on what company it is and what blend they're using. So before they even hatch out, they're getting a boost. It's really neat to watch this machine at work. The reason why it candles the eggs is so that it doesn't give a shot to an egg that's no chicken side of it. There's no development. And that actually sends that egg to a flat or a barrel where it's disposed of because there's no chicken side. So these machines, they do a pretty good job And companies take very good care of those machines. We talked about parental immunity, and I talked briefly about immunosuppression. But let's talk about some of the language we use when we talk about vaccines. We sometimes say that vaccines carry with them a titer, T-I-T-E-R. It's a vaccine titer or an antibody titer, and that corresponds to the number of vaccine particles, living or dead, per unit or volume that we're dealing with. And we take a look at the vaccine titer to see if the correct dose and titer have been given for every bird. Sometimes the person giving the shot didn't do it perfectly, or sometimes the bird doesn't have a good vaccine titer response. So to determine if the bird has a high titer or a good response to a vaccine, you can take a blood sample from the bird several weeks or days later and determine if that bird is producing antibodies to the vaccine you gave them. Now, I tell a lot of your listeners to submit birds to their diagnostic lab alive, right, Andy? Because
right.
you can't get blood from a dead bird. If you take a sick bird into a vet or a diagnostic lab, they can take a blood sample and determine if there's an antibody titer there. The antibody titer could mean one of two things. What it tells the vet or the diagnostician is, this bird is producing antibodies to this organism, organism A, B, or C. Now, why is that bird producing antibodies to that organism? Is it because the bird recently received a vaccination for that organism, or has the bird been exposed to the wild-type organism? And that's where the veterinarian or the diagnostician would come back to the farmer and say, did you recently vaccinate for this organism? If it's yes, then the veterinarian's like, oh, okay, that explains why the antibody titer is so high. If not, if you haven't recently vaccinated for that organism, then the veterinarian says, aha, this bird is responding to a wild-type infection. This bird has been exposed to organism A, B, or C, and is actively showing signs and symptoms from it. That's why the antibody titer is so high. So that's why a blood sample is so valuable to a veterinarian or a diagnostician when they are trying to determine why the bird is sick. Sometimes you can't take a sick bird in to the vet. Sometimes they pass away before you can get them in there. Sometimes they can check the tissues for the presence of the virus. There are other calling cards that the virus can leave behind in certain tissues that says, hey, I was here and I did damage. And that's another reason why you can submit a dead bird and they'll look at a bunch of the tissues and look for characteristic signs. When your body combats agents that invade, the antigens that invade, you've got cellular immunity and humoral immunity. Cellular immunity is when white blood cells or macrophages are produced. Humoral immunity is when the antibodies are circulating in the blood and they bind to microorganisms or even toxins. In the chicken, you've got cellular immunity that is located in the neck. The organ that produces cellular immunity creates T cells, and they're named T cells because they're produced by the thymus. What organ in our bodies, Andy, would produce T cells in the neck?
Yeah, it's the, let me guess, it's the, the hypothalamus gland.
Thyroid gland.
Thyroid gland.
Yeah.
I almost said the medulla oblongata, or whatever. That's familiar, wasn't it?
No, not the medulla oblongata. But it's in the same place in us, but it's a much larger gland. The thymus is actually a series of nodes along the length of the neck, and that creates the cell-mediated response, or the cellular immunity. Those sensitized T cells attack foreign antigens, and they secrete lymphocytes. Now, for us, we're going to talk about B cells. B cells are what produce, they also produce lymphocytes, but they also act like memory cells, and they last a lot longer. In the chicken, B cells are responsible, and in us, they're responsible for antibody-mediated responses. So the B cells transform into plasma cells, and they secrete antibodies, and then the antibodies bind to the antigens, and therefore the antigens are destroyed, or at least flagged for destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that done in the human? Where are B cells produced?
Oh, geez. Where are B cells? Okay, let me think here. We figured they're either going to be produced. Yeah, this is a stretch for my paramedic. liver, spleen.
No, that's where things are destroyed. Do you want an area where these cells are produced?
Well, the spleen. Okay, produced in the blood. Give me a hint.
Let me help you out here. It's the bone marrow.
In mammals,
the bone marrow is where you get your B cells from. In birds, it's going to be the bursa, or the bursa of Fabricius, whichever name you choose to use, which is a little structure right by their vent, or cloaca. It's a little outpocketing of immune system tissue right by their vent, and that's where their B cells come from. And that's why the name B cell came about, is because we figured out B cells are produced by the bursa, and that was discovered in chickens first. Yay for chickens and science! So,
somebody asked a question in the chat room, and I'm sure you'll be able to answer this, but they asked the question, isn't the bursa gone by 20 weeks?
Yes, the bursa does slowly disappear. And, you know, it regresses, basically. And, you know, there's a couple different types of bones in the chicken. There's the hollow bones, which allow the birds to fly. And then there's the long bones, which are where kind of the bone marrow starts to take over some of the bursa's job once the bursa starts to regress. But that bursa, it's just pretty darn cool. If you open up a bird that's a couple years old, you're not going to see a bursa. But if you open up a chick that's a few weeks old, you're going to see a bursa, unless it got a specific disease that offs the bursa. That's where you get, and yay for Delaware, we have a disease named after a town in Delaware, and it's infectious bursal disease. Originally called Gumboro disease, and so all researchers who work on infectious bursal disease who ever come to Delaware, they always want to go to the Gumboro firehouse and have their picture taken next to the sign saying they went to the town that was named, that gave their disease the name, Gumboro disease. So if there is a specific virus that says, hey, I'm going to cause immune suppression by going after the bursa, and that's called infectious bursal disease virus, or IBDV. So that's kind of a unique immune system fact for your young listeners. It's an autoimmune disease. Yep.
While it's on my brain, before we wrap up in a few minutes, because I'll forget or I'll get sidetracked or ask another question, just because somebody may be thinking this, and I know it's an article you're actually writing. By the way, the first due date is April 25th. I'll go ahead and kill two birds with one stone.
I have been told.
But I know you're going to be writing an article for our summer issue, probably titled something like The Dangers of Attracting Wild Birds to Your Backyard Flock. And so just to make sure that people who may have their birds vaccinated for everything that's possible to have them vaccinated for is still not an excuse or to give you a comfort level that it is safe to attract wild bird. Oh, it might have been vaccinated for
It's not an excuse for poor biosecurity, period, because not everything is perfect. You might not have birds that were receptive, or you might have given vaccine at the wrong time. If you're going to vaccinate for your birds, use common sense.
That's a lost art in this day.
Go to a veterinarian and pay for their services. What are the services they're going to render from you? Get a vaccination schedule out of them and use it every year. Write it down. Keep it in your records. And then go to it each time that it's time to vaccinate. And just use that same vaccination schedule. If you're the kind of person who shows frequently, you're going to have a different vaccination schedule than someone who never lets their birds leave their property and never has anybody come onto their property.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone who engages in high-risk behavior, like you went to a show that you found out broke with a certain disease and there's a risk that you could have it, put into effect your quarantine, your biosecurity quarantine and isolation measures, and then consider, well, am I going to go back to that area? Is this a consistent problem? You have to watch, wait, and listen. And then figure out, okay, well, do I want to cover myself by vaccinating? Well, number one, not all diseases have a vaccine that we can use legally in the United States. Like the avian influenza, we don't vaccinate for it. We prevent it, because if we vaccinate for it, then that creates more issues than it's worth. We'd rather do prevention. You can vaccinate, however, for Newcastle disease. So you go to a veterinarian, you pay for their services once, you get a vaccination schedule for all stages of growth for your birds, and then you keep that records on file. And each year, as you start again with your hatching out, you put it on your calendar. Batch number one, I vaccinated on this day with this vaccine. Okay, I need to order that now. And you put that on your calendar for each vaccination step for all your birds. And then hopefully, if you've hatched things out and timed things well, you can just have one day where you give everybody the booster. And if you only have, you know, maybe 50 birds, that's not all day. And for those of you who are very scared about giving bird shots, a lot of these vaccines can be given via eye drop. It activates the Hardirian gland in the eye. And through the lacrimal duct at the corner of the eye that connects to the nose, then it goes into the nose of the bird, which connects to the mouth, and they swallow it, therefore activating their Peyer's patches or their gut-associated immunity. So you never have to give them a shot, but maybe once a year. And that's pretty much a mellow thing. You know, you have someone hold the bird, you give the shot, you use a tiny little needle, it's no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Other ways?
Last question from the chat room, which was related. Pips and Peeps, who asked about the bursa gone in 20 weeks. Is it safe to say that after 20 weeks, the chickens are less able to combat disease because it goes away? Or are they just combated a different way, like you were saying,
Different mechanisms. Because the bursa is gone, there's different mechanisms. And hopefully by 20 weeks, they've been exposed to enough things that they have primed their immune system to give the correct response. Whether or not you have primed their immune system by giving them vaccines, or you've got a really dirty environment and they survived it, that is, you know, hopefully they have then figured out how to initiate the correct immune response when challenged with something that is likely to make them sick. Now, fowl pox, that's a really unique organism. Because of the way you give the vaccine. When your chickens flap between their humerus and their radius and ulna sections of their wing, they've got a wing web. It's just a little flap of skin. And what you would do is take the fowlpox vaccine and a fowlpox vaccination stick, which is just two stainless steel prongs with a groove on the inside that holds a little drop of vaccine. So you dip the prongs into the vaccine, the grooves hang onto the vaccine, and you stab that all the way through their wing web and pull it back out. And it's just a quick stab, and wow, they're vaccinated. Done. The only thing you have to worry about is if you have a bird that has a lot of feathers right there, you might want to pluck one or two to make sure you get the vaccine onto the skin and not onto the feathers. It's not going to help them if it lands on the feathers. It's really got to go into the skin. And that is a really quick and easy vaccination method. So if you have mosquitoes in your area, if you've had problems with fowlpox in the past, if you have people around you with fowlpox problems and you know there's mosquitoes in the area, fowlpox vaccination is really easy. Don't be afraid of it. Just don't stab yourself. I mean, let's just use common sense.
like splashing yourself with salmonella or campylobacter.
Yeah. Just use common sense. You know, when you use equipment, make sure it's clean and free of disinfectants. What did I just say? I said don't use disinfectants on equipment that might come in contact with your vaccine, because then if there's lingering disinfectant, you kill your vaccine and you're not vaccinating them anymore. You know, you can, some of these vaccines can be given in the water, and you mix a little bit of dried milk with the water, and, you know, you can mix it with the vaccine. But every bird needs to get a dose of vaccine, so make sure you hold the water back and, you know, for several hours ahead of time, and then you give the water that has the vaccine in it so that everybody gets a drink. But then again, you're going to have to dispose of all that. And so you want to read up about whatever vaccine you're giving. And that's where your veterinarian can really help you, and is, you know, look at your system and write up a vaccination schedule for you, and away you go. Now, if your state doesn't have an extension poultry veterinarian, your state vet's office should be able to help any veterinarian that you go to. That's what they're there for. Otherwise, you could go to a poultry vet, and they should be able to write up a vaccination schedule for you based upon your specific needs and what you have to offer as far as a flock. So there you go, Andy. Did I miss any other questions in the chat room?
I didn't see any others. No worries there. So lots of great information.
Are you there?
Of course, listen to the archive. It's a very valuable show for people to listen to. Perfect timing.
Uh-oh, Andy, you are breaking up. I can't hear you at all now. Oh, dear. Well, I'll just keep talking until I hear Andy come back. But we're at the end of our show. I do recommend that you take the time to get a vaccination schedule for your flock wherever you live. And, you know, talk about...
Sorry about that.
I got disconnected.
I looked down at my phone because I was chatting away and didn't hear any response. And it said, disconnected, check coverage area in your area, blah, 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 blah. So I obviously had coverage for the last hour and a half. So, up until everything to where you said, and I don't know what if y'all heard me even start yapping after you handed it over to me or not. I'm not sure. I mean, it was probably immediate because I could still listen to you. So I was
telling people to talk to their veterinarian to see, you know, when they should vaccinate for fowlpox and when they should vaccinate for Merrick's disease and when they should vaccinate for some other things if they're a problem. And personally, I think a good combination vaccine is mycoplasma and Newcastle disease and infectious bronchitis all in one shot. And they do sell them in combinations, and I know you have another contributor to your show who sells said types of vaccines. And is willing to break up the 10 packs so that you can get just one bottle and make your vaccination. So there is assistance out there. You are not alone. There are people who can help you. And since mycoplasma is such a big problem in backyard flocks, I would say add that to your list of things, or get it in the polyvalent vaccine. So it's just one thing you can check off your to-do list.
Okay, mycoplasma, and of course I know a lot of folks, because it's, like you said earlier, everywhere.
Yeah, mycoplasma is one that you need to pay. It's going to call your bluff as far as biosecurity. So it's one of those organisms. It's on the short list when people get sick chickens. So.
We're at a pinpoint. All righty. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Another great episode. Depending on where we're at, what we're doing, if we're on the road, if we have an event, and all those variables, in a couple of weeks we will have you back. 2 weeks from today, another Thursday will come in. I guess it would be this first and third Thursdays. Dr. McRae joins us. So thanks for joining us today. Awesome topic, and we look forward to having you back very soon.
Thank you, Andy.
You're welcome. Take care. And then again, maybe we'll have a chance to, when we're on our fall tour up to the Northeast, Virginia to Maine, in the fall, August 15th, September 5th, and in that area, then we can hook up with Dr. McRae, maybe do a live broadcast at her university. We'll just have to see if that is in the cards for our trip when we're up there, and where we'll actually be and what events are taking place. So, everybody, thank you very much for tuning in today. We do appreciate it. Great show. Again, you can listen to the archive in its entirety, probably 15 minutes after the show leaves the air. And I will again post on Facebook and Twitter the next show. We are on the road, so they are sporadic here and there. We may even try to pop in with an evening show in the evening with some of our guests to try to entertain you and educate you about backyard poultry. So again, thank you very much for tuning in today, and we will see the next show we have, which I will post on Facebook. So have a great week and weekend, everybody. God bless. And if I can find the right button to push, you will hear our theme song. Have a great day, everybody. Ha ha.